Take your notes with me. We're in a series called Modern Family, talking about families. And I have a friend that he travels to different high schools and does assemblies. He does assemblies and talks for 9th through 12th grade. And it's all about how to make choices in life, and specifically what some of the dangers are if you get involved in drugs. And so he's been all over the western part of the United States. And it's one high school, big, huge high school. Everybody's in the gymnasium. They're like the entire wall, the bleachers is filled with 9th through 12th graders. And he's giving his talk to these high school students. And there's this one high school student over on one side that's kind of disruptive at first. And then, you know, he gets a little bit louder. And then he's making wisecracks. And pretty soon everybody's laughing. He's really got, you know, this one side of the gym is kind of watching him more than even listening to the talk. And my friend notices that, you know, what's going on, and he sees him, and he looks at him, and this kid has a T-shirt on, and in big letters across the front, it says, "Stop Virginity." And he had like a moment of insight. He asks him, he says, "Hey, come here for a second. I want to see your shirt." So this kid's a ham, you know. He stands up and starts like pimping, you know, flexing his muscles, and now the entire student body is like cheering. He's like, "Yeah," you know, and he's like twirling around. He says, "Come here for a second. Come out of here. I want to get a better look at your shirt." And so he walks out there in front of everybody, and he's showing like this. And my friend says, "Now listen, what I want to do is I want to buy your shirt. I'll give you $100 for that T-shirt. I just have to keep one condition, but other than that, I'll give you $100 for that T-shirt." And so, I mean, right away, the kid just rips it off. He's like bare-chested. Now the place just explodes. You know, he's like, you know, bare-chested. He tosses the shirt to my friend. And my friend, you know, gets $100 out of his wallet, and he starts to hand it to him. He folds up the shirt. He says, "Okay, here's the $100, but now one condition." He says, "On your daughter's 16th birthday, you have to give her this shirt as a present." And he said the kid's face just went white. And the whole assembly, you could have heard a pin drop. And it is true, when things get a little closer to your family, they change. And today we're going to talk about parents and what it means to be a child. Because not all of us will be parents, and you know, some of you are, some of you aren't. But we're all children. And so today we're going to talk about what is it like to have parents in the modern family. And take a look at the big idea this week. And our relationship with our parents is a picture of our relationship with God. So that's the idea that, and it might be a bit overstated, but it is true that our parents are the first ones there. They set the emotional context. They do all the providing. I mean, we learn when we grow up, I mean, they're the bigger ones. You know, they set the rules. They have all the power. And we really learn a lot about ourselves. We learn a lot about other people and authority. And really, we really do probably see some things about God in terms of, like, right off the bat with our parents. And so it becomes a picture for us. And here's something in the Bible to give us an idea of what it can be. Let me read it to you. "Children, obey your parents because you belong to the Lord, for this is the right thing to do. Honor your father and your mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. If you honor your father and your mother, things will go well for you and you'll have a long life on earth. Fathers, don't provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them. Rather, bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord." St. Paul, the Apostle Paul, talking here, and he's quoting the fifth commandment. So, you know, the Ten Commandments, the ten principles that everybody can live by, and this is the fifth one, and it has a promise attached to it. Like anything else, it says, you know, if this will occur, you know, there's a promise. There's some things that will happen in your life. It's saying that if your relationship with your parents has honor in it, regardless of how they parented you, regardless of the type of parents that they've been to you, if you can find a way to honor them, and the word honor means respect. And let's face it, it's not always easy to respect your folks. You know, you might think, "Why am I going to honor my parents or respect my parents?" Because they weren't worthy of it. They didn't live in a way that would cause me to respect them. And God's not asking you to throw an awards banquet for your parents. That's not what this means. What he's saying is that there's a way to hold your parents with respect. There's a way to honor them. And when you do that, things go well for you in life. Because when you get embittered with your parents, things don't go well. And the way to cause something between you and your parents, regardless of how they parent you, is to find a way to respect them. Now it is, you know, it can be very difficult to be honest about who your parents are. word honor, the word honest comes from the same root, to be honest about who they are. To be able to be honest when you don't admire your parents. I mean, there's a tendency, it's sometimes like the bad stuff, to hide it, to gloss it over, to tell lies, to make up things about them, and to not really be able to be honest who they are. And then also at times when you have difficulty with your folks, it can be very, very difficult to give them credit in areas that they actually deserve. And what this scripture is talking about is there is a way to be honest with your folks, and there's a way to respect your folks, and it starts with willing to like understand exactly who they are and what they're all about. So look in your notes here. We'll talk tonight. You can honor your parents. That's the first thing. You know, how is it that I am honest with my parents? You know, how can I honor them? And I don't know what context your folks came from. I don't know the family background that you kind of see in them, but everybody has one. And part of life is trying to figure out, well, what kind of a background did my parents come from? Like, where did it all begin for them? And my family, my grandmother was married 5 times. And she ran off with a boy when she was 15. She got pregnant. And then was a series of men after that. So my mom, who was the only child, she was raised in a family that was just like a revolving door of men in her life. And that was the context that she grew up in. And then when she got old enough, that became her life. I had a lot of stepdads come through my life. A lot of stepdads came through because she kind of picked up where her mom left off, which can happen sometimes. I don't know if you've ever seen something in your parents and you said, I'm never going to do that. I hate that. I'm never going to be like that. And then down the road, you're like, how did this happen? And that's what happened with my mom. She turned out a lot like that. And by the time I got into elementary school, she had become an alcoholic, and the more she drank, the better I just got really bitter towards her. And never really thought about where she came from, what her life was like. I just knew that, like, it wrecked my family. So I was very bitter towards her. Until one day, I came in on a conversation with my stepdad. He was on the phone, and he was screaming into the phone. I don't mean to be harsh, but I'm going to let you know exactly what he said, because it is a little rough. Screaming in the phone, he goes, I know what you did. I know what you, the secret's out. I know what you did. You abused her. You sexually abused her. And I just walked in on that. I heard that. And it was stunning, of course. You know, I was like, I didn't mean to hear it. What was really odd about it is that I figured out who he was talking to, and he was someone in our extended family that was revered. He wore a suit and tie every day, and he owned a really successful business, and everybody in the family esteemed him. He was like the perfect guy and everything, and then there was this secret. It was there all those years, and the first time my mom had ever said it. And all that was going on that whole time. And when I heard that, it did change things for me. Things didn't get easier in my family, but I did have some context. I started to try to figure out, well, okay, if this is where she came from and what she went through, and one of the ways you honor your parents is to be willing to see their life in a bigger picture than what just includes you. Because a lot of times that's how we see our parents. It's just like, well, how do you treat me? And what's it been like for me? And what's our family been like? But there's a bigger picture that goes on. And to go a little deeper with your folks, to respect them, is to try to figure out the bigger picture that they came from. What type of context were your parents raised in? Because sometimes you can get so busted up and disappointed and crazy about it, you never think about that. But there is a context that they come from. And I think about that a lot with my 2 sons. You know, what did my background bring into my relationship with my children, my family? You know, I became a Christian, I got married pretty young, and all of a sudden I have a son, and then another son, and I'm trying to raise them. And seriously, it was like someone coming asking me to build a boat, and I'd never seen a boat. You know, I never had a father. I hardly had a mom. And it's like someone comes and says, I want you to build a boat. And you're like, well, I've heard of boats, but I've never even seen a boat. And so you build a boat the best you can, and sometimes it does not float. And the boat's like barely hanging in there in the water, you know, and you're like, well, I'm doing the best I can. I have no idea what it's like to be fathered. And you're supposed to be a father. And you're hoping your kids can catch that. You know, you're hoping that, you know what I found for you that are parents, that sometimes the best thing you can do is just to own up and just say, man, forgive me for that. I'm sorry. I just, that was my issues, my stuff got involved. And, you know, sucks for you that you have me right now because this is part of it. My issues got in there. If you can, again, honor, honesty. And to just talk to your kids, because we all bring our stuff in there. We all have a context. And so I'm just asking, you know, as you like check in with your relationship with your folks and your parents, is one of the ways you honor them and it'll go well with you, is try to get the picture a little bigger. There's an interesting verse in the Bible. Let me read it to you. And then I'll explain some things about it. Lift up your eyes and look around. All your sons gather and come to you. As surely as I live, declares the Lord, you will wear them all as ornaments. And this is something, it's saying that your children, when you're a parent, your children, regardless of how things go, you wear them as ornaments. It's like when my son Capone was in elementary school, he got a guitar and he was like a knack right off the bat. He was musical and he was, right off the bat, he was just musical. He got involved in music at really young. And when he was in junior high school, at the graduation, they had a lot of people there, hundreds of people there. It was a big, huge room. And he got to put together a band and play a song on the graduation night. So, I mean, during the whole thing, you know, the main thing is, you know, my son and this band, and they did a Coldplay tune called Yellow. And I will never forget sitting in the audience and, you know, Capone's up there and he's doing the song. And I just, it was like the amazing, it was like I had an ornament on. It really was. It was like I saw a reflection of myself and him, and it was amazing to be that proud. I remember just watching him and just inside. I didn't even care. I didn't even tell, that's my son. I didn't even do that. I was like, God, look at him, man. That is amazing. You know, you're just, for a moment, it's almost like he's representing you. It's like when someone sees something in your kids, and it's beautiful or it's awesome, it's like somehow you're sort of in it. It's like it's a reflection on who you are. It's like they're an ornament. My other son, Kalani, will graduate this year for the University of Utah in May. So he gets to walk and do all this stuff. And I know at that graduation, I already know I'm going to cry. Because, like, that kind of stuff, you know, it's like it's going to overwhelm me. I already know I'm going to. I'm going to try not to, and I'm probably going to try to pretend I'm not and turn away and everything, but I'm going to. Because when I see him up there, it's going to be like a reflection of me because he's been so tenacious. I mean, he left high school early and got into college and fight, get all the way, fight, finally get it done, you know. And one of the greatest things for parents is when they can see themselves in their children. Do you know one of the best ways you can honor your folks? Is let them see themselves in you. That's something my dad never got to do. You know, I don't even know the whole story. I just know he was never there, and he was never around as I grew up, and never got a chance to see me play basketball, never saw me play baseball. You know, he was never able to look at me. He totally missed that. Never got to experience that. To look at me and see a reflection of him. I was never even able to honor him, really, in that. Now, my grandpa, who was his father, who decided to take me in as own, and you know, all my life he was like the father figure, he had a chance to see that. He was like the dad type. And when I went into ministry pretty young, and you know, they asked me to come be a pastor, and so I got into ministry. I never thought I would, and it was shocking to my friends and my family, like, no way, this is like going to be a bad joke, you, a pastor. But off I went, you know. So my grandpa, he always had the hardest time, like, not accepting it, but he didn't know how to relate to it because he wasn't into religion. He didn't go to church or anything. He saw me being a completely different type of person. You know, my grandpa, I was always going to be a lawyer. He's like, oh, you got a gift for gab. You're going to be a lawyer. But it didn't turn out that way. I ended up here. So anyways, one time he came to a wedding I was performing, my sister's wedding. So my grandpa comes to, and he didn't see me very often in the setting that I worked in. It was like I mentioned, he didn't go to church. And so he's always kind of on the outside, like wondering, what is it that you do? And what is it to be a pastor? And, you know, he really couldn't understand it. But this one time he's at this wedding. You know, at a wedding, so you do the ceremony, you talk to them about, you know, two become one flesh, you discuss it, and you tell the crowd some things, and, you know, you perform the wedding, and then at the end, you know, they turn and you let them smooch, and you give each other a big kiss, and yeah, they do that. And then you turn and you say, now I want to introduce you for the very first time, and you introduce them to the whole friends and family, you know, and that's the ceremony. Big, huge, long kiss, you know, and then they turn, and everybody's like joyful, and they hold hands, and they walk out, you know, here we go, the big moment. And so I turn and, you know, say to them, give each other a kiss, and they do, and then they turn and they face the crowd, and I say, I'd like to introduce you for the very first time, you know, and I say my sister's new name, and everybody starts clapping, and it's her big moment, you know, and she's just about ready to step out and go forward, and my grandpa yells out, my grandfather, great job, Robin! And I was like, Grandpa, not now, you know, it's like, but here's the truth. I think he just, in that moment, he just saw something. At that moment, I was an ornament on his neck. He always wanted to be a public speaker. He just wasn't. My grandpa was a meat and potatoes insurance salesman all his life. He was a one-on-one talker. He'd get up in front, But I think in that moment, he saw something. There was a reflection for him. Now, when you think of respecting your parents and honoring your parents, I want to say a qualifier to you, because some of you have probably been through some things with your folks, and you're like, well, does that mean I have to dismiss what they've done to me? Does that mean, you know, the different things that have happened to me, do I have to brush that all aside? And the answer is no, you don't have to. Like, if some things happened with your parents and it's not okay, then don't try to make it okay. Don't try to dismiss it. You can respect your parents without doing all that. You have to be honest about it. But here's what it does mean. You know, what would happen if you just picked up the phone this week and just to allow your parents to see a reflection, to be an ornament around their neck again, if you just picked up the phone and said, Mom, I've been, you know, this week I realized that I'm really good in math, and I all of a sudden remembered you're really good in math. And I think I got that from you. I mean, this knack I have with math, it's like, I got that from you, Mom. Or you call your dad up and say, Dad, it is so crazy, but I looked in my garage this week and I organize it the same way you do. You know, or you tell your mom, you say, Mom, you know, everything I ever learned about money, I think I got watching you. Or maybe your dad did rescue you one time from some dude and just said, Dad, you know what? I should have never been with that guy. And, you know, thanks for buying the gun. You know, it's a very practical way to honor your parents and respect them. Because let's be honest about something. There's lots of things about our parents that it's not noteworthy and we don't admire it. And a small step to start to respect them is two things. Understand the context that they come from, and then just like find something of like kind and just say, hey, I like this about myself, and I think I got it from you. That's a way to honor them. Now look at the next thing, turn over, and it's point number two, is you can forgive your parents. This is Jesus talking, and forgive us of our sins. Maybe you'll recognize this. Some people call this the Lord's Prayer. And forgive us of our sins as we have forgiven those who sin against us. And don't let us yield to temptation, but rescue us from the evil one. Circle that. If you forgive those who sin against you, your heavenly Father will forgive you. But if you refuse to forgive others, your Father will not forgive your sins. Oscar Wilde said, kids start out loving their parents, and then they judge their parents, but they rarely forgive their parents. And I don't know, maybe you like, maybe you don't, like when you think of forgiveness, you don't think it's that necessary. You're like, why, we got to dredge everything up and talk about it, and I hate that stuff. And, you know, maybe you look at it and you think, hey, man, you know, a quick apology and a sorry is good. That's all you ever need. But the truth is that families don't work that way. You know, sometimes an apology, I mean, in fact, the apology and sorry and forgive are entirely different words. They cause entirely different things. They're all good. But you know what? Apology, like that word means to defend. Apologetics is the science of defense. Like how to defend things. And so sometimes really when people come and they offer an apology, or like when I offer an apology, what I'm really wanting is could it just go away? I don't want to talk about it. I just want to go away from it. Could we just forget about it and move on? I want to apologize for something. And sorry now. So apology is, can we just move on? It's like defending myself from having to admit it, defending myself from having to go to a more genuine, more sincere place. Like, I don't want to do that. I want to stay away from that kind of intimacy. So I defend myself from that by saying, I apologize. And sometimes it works, but sometimes it makes you feel a little empty when someone apologizes. I mean, you're glad to get it, but you're like, I don't know if that connected deep enough with me. And think about sorry. You know, you roll up to somebody and you say you're sorry. That's a big, big deal. I mean, you know, you have a friend there, and maybe their grandpa dies, and you go and you say, I'm really sorry to hear that. And that means a lot. But if someone comes up to you and says, I am so sorry that I stole your purse, and then they walk off with it on their shoulder, something's missing for you. You're like, well, because sorry is an expression of sorrow. So you're going to stand there and you're going to think, well, I'm so glad that she's sad she stole my purse. And then you're going to think, but I want it back. You're not going to be okay. So, well, God, you're sad that you stole it. Okay. You know, keep it. Can I give you my credit card too? I mean, it's like, no, you're going to be like, no, that's something's missing. Forgive is entirely different than that. Think of the word forgive. Forgiveness means you're giving something. It's all the sins and all the hard things and all the overwhelming things and all the hurts. It means to be able to give those to God. When Jesus died on the cross, he said, forgive them. You know, when you give up something, when you forgive something, a lot of you may not be able to forgive your folks. I know for me, I couldn't forgive my parents because I was still loaded up with all the things they did to me. And I had to give those to God before I could forgive them. What did your parents do to you? And it's still inside you. And maybe you've tried to let it go, which can be really frustrating, because normally when you try to let something go, you're all by yourself. And you're just all by yourself trying to let it go. And the word is not forego, it's forgive. And give means there's somebody else there. And you give something to God. The Hebrew word in the Bible for forgive is the same as it is for dance. They come from the same type of word. And what the Hebrew writers were saying is that when you forgive, when you go to God, it's like having a dance with God. And here's the cool thing about dancing. You know, there's no wrong way to dance. You know, like, well, if you saw me, you might think there definitely is a wrong way to dance. But, I mean, we all get to dance. I mean, like, we can, you know, do the robot or the disco dance or something. I mean, but, like, dancing dancing's for everyone. Everybody gets to dance. And what the writers in the Bible are trying to say, these two words, forgive and dancing, they're saying everybody can dance with God. And when you dance with God, you can give him something. Everybody can dance with God. I mean, it's a dance. Everybody gets to dance. To dance with God is just to say a prayer and to talk with him and to be with him and be close with him and give him the things that are too overwhelming. Most of religion says you got to do some great dancing, man, to catch God's eye. Man, you better dance it up, and you better be looking good, and you better get down and do some river dance dancing. You better be like a dancer, moonwalk dancer. Then maybe God will help you. Nah. He wants to dance with everybody because he wants to forgive everybody. Because there's things you're going to have to give him before you can forgive your parents. And this might seem at first blush a little harsh. Well, if I don't forgive them, then I'm not going to be forgiven. This is all it means. It means that if you haven't been able to forgive them, it's probably because you haven't been with God to be forgiven. That's all it's saying. It's saying, well, the reason you're not forgiven is because you haven't been with God to ask him. When's the last time you danced with him in whatever way you do? And one of the tragedies in life and one of the things that seems so unfair is that when people sin against me, it normally causes me to sin. When people hurt me, it usually causes me to hurt other people. When people wrong me, I usually treat other people wrong. I mean, that's the crazy thing about life is you know, hurt, mad, mean. I get hurt, I get mad, I get mean. And it seems so unfair. It's like I didn't even start this thing. Somebody does something to me, they sin against me, and then I get hurt and I get angry, and then I sin against them, and then I'm stuck. Like, I've got sin in my life, and someone comes and points it out. That's kind of a bad, sinful attitude. I'm like, you have no idea what they did to me. Well, you should ask God to forgive you. Forgive me? Do you know what they did? I didn't even start this thing. How dare you talk to me about my sins when they're the ones that did the sinning? God, it's so easy for me to go there. And if I start dancing with God, years ago, I decided I wanted to find my real dad. And so I did an all-out search, and I found him. And so I got a message through to him that I was going to call him at a certain time. Now, I'd never seen my dad, you know. I didn't know what he looked like. We'd never spoken, you know. And so, but I never had seen him, but I got to the age where my kids are getting a little older, and I thought, well, hey, you know, never contacted me before, you know, missed every birthday, never going to hear from him. If I'm ever going to even see his face, it's going to have to be me. And so I got a hold of him, and we set a time to talk on the telephone. And I'll tell you, I was pretty nervous about it. And I had another Christian friend, and this is why it's good to have Christian friends, is I went to him, and I said, you know, we talked it through, and he said, you know, I went through something like that with my dad one time, my real dad. I was estranged from him, and after a while, we were going to talk, and he goes, what I did is I wrote down the three things that I wanted to make sure I acted like. And when I went into that conversation, I kept them on a little card, and I kept looking at him because I was so mad at him. And I knew that if I didn't have something to lock me in, all that anger was going to come out towards him, and I didn't want that to be the first time. So I really prayed and thought about it, and I came up with three things, and I put them on this big piece of cardboard. And when I called him that night, I kept that in one hand and the receiver on the other, man. And I just kept looking at that. The Bible says that God will not be mocked. What a person sows, they will reap. What it's saying is whatever seed you put into the ground is what will grow. So if you're a gardener, you're not going to plant tomatoes this year and you're going to get avocados. God won't be mocked. Whatever seed goes in, that's the fruit that comes. So I knew I could sow something into my dad. It was like a seed. I was like, I'm putting, one of them was acceptance. And so he picks up the phone and we have a conversation. I just hung in there and, you know, it kind of got somewhere in it. And so like the next month we talked again and then we talked again. And he even came to my house. He saw my kids and I met him, and it was really like, you know, freaky to see someone you'd never seen. And he kind of looks like you, and he had some of the same mannerisms I had, and I didn't know if I liked it or not, really, to be honest. And, it, you know, I was like, I don't know if I even like being associated with you. But then I had to admit it. I was like, look at his hands. They look just like my freaking hands. You know, it's like, it was really weird. But we got along all right. And so then he went back home. And after about a month went by, I called him again. And as soon as he picked up the phone, I knew something was off. Because his language was kind of slurring. And one of my hot buttons, definitely, is like being around drunk people. It's not that easy for me because I drink. But like drunk people, it's not always easy for me. And so that's just my thing. I'm not putting that on anybody. But anyways, like I could tell he was drunk. And so I said, hey, Tom. That was his name, Tom. Hey, Tom, how are you? He starts, and then he tells me he's in a bar. And we're kind of, and the longer we talked, it started getting very, very strained, and I could tell he was getting angry. I was like, gosh, I wonder what's going on. And finally he blurts out, he says, you know what? If you're going to call me Tom, if you can't call me Dad, I don't think we have anything to talk about. I mean, I'm your father. And if you can't call me, if you got to call me Tom, you know, you can't call me Dad, then we don't need to talk. And bam, he hung up right in my ear. And I was on the phone going, I was like stunned. I was like, I remember kind of smiling like, are you crazy? You weren't there for me. You never saw one thing I ever went through. You never spent a dime on me. You think you deserve to be called Dad? I was so freaking, I couldn't even believe it. I was like, I remember just setting the phone down and saying, it was so overwhelming to have that. It was so illogical. I was like, are you freaking crazy? I would never call you Dad. I don't even want anybody to know that I know you. And he's just like, you know, and here's what they say about when you get hurt by parents or people. It's like getting bit by a snake. It's the bite hurts, but it's the poison that kills you. And you know what the poison was? It was the bitterness. Man, and I felt it come up in me quickly. I got so bitter so fast. I said, I initiated the conversation. I invited you to my house, man. I've taken every step towards you. You're freaking drunk in some bar somewhere, and I call you up, and you tell me, well, you don't think I'm your dad. Oh, man, it was, you know how bitterness is initially? It makes you feel powerful. So initially, I don't know what it is. Initially, bitterness is like it feels pretty good until it gets to, like, your taste buds. And then you're like, ugh. And I was bitter for a while. I mean, it's just, you know, it hurts to get bit, but bitterness is worse, and it was poison. It was poisoning me, and it was coming out in all my relationships. And then I had to go dance. I went to be with God, and I just gave it to him. I gave it to him for a while. It was months I gave it to him. It was a long dance with God. We did separation dance and close dance. And sometimes when you're dancing with God, you'll be dancing with him and you'll start to get close and you'll start to get free of something. And there's this like part of us that doesn't want to get rid of it. I want to be mad longer. So you pull away from God. I don't want to dance anymore, God. It's working. I want to be mad longer. I did that too. Because you're going to make me call him dad and over my dead body. He's never hearing that word come out of my mouth. But then, you know, you see the Lord on the dance floor. And there's just something about the way he motions to your heart, and you're like, okay, you know, just one dance, God, one. And then you're dancing a while longer. And then giving him what's so painful begins to feel better than the bitterness. And that happens in a dance. And eventually, I gave it to him completely. It was about a year later. And I called him back. And man, you talk about a struggle. I mean, I said it so many times before I dialed the phone. And then he picked up. I was like, hey, Dad, it's Robin. And oh, it was, you know. And I even invited him to my house. And he came to my house. And he came completely sober. He was suit and tie and hung out with my family. And he never said one word about what he did. And I noticed two things. I thought, well, I don't know who writes the definition of dad, but I'm not bitter at you anymore. I don't know where this will go, but the dance took it away. Now, I don't know how you're doing with your folks. And this is what we're talking about. And guess what? It's not modern. You know, it's in all families. I'm angry and I'm bitter. And it's the dance with God. It's the Hebrew word for forgive. It's when God said, if you'll come and dance with me, what will happen is you'll be able to give me the things that are so painful with your parents. You won't be bitter anymore. And at the end of that time that he was with us, when we went to the airport, I just like was really clear when he left. I said, well, there he goes. There goes my dad. You know, and the best part about it was, you know, I have a mark from the bite, for sure. There's no poison in me anymore. And if you don't want the poison in you, get out on the dance floor. Let him dance around with you for a while. You'll find your willingness to give him. And that's what Jesus is saying here in this part of the Bible. He's saying, you know, you're going to find out that you're going to end up with a heart that needs to be forgiven too. And then you'll be able to forgive them. And the good news, and you can see in your notes, is you can receive God's unconditional family love. And I put family love there because everybody wants to be loved by their family. And it's a shame that we're broken and that we screw it up a lot of different ways. Everybody wants to be okay in their families. And I always tell this story every year, year and a half or so. About a year and a half I told it. And so if you heard it, just enjoy it again. It's about Jay Leno. And I like Jay Leno. I just do. He's not super, super funny, but I just like him anyways. The chin is in. I like him. And so, but Jay Leno, he comes from this really cool family. And he tells this story in high school. They didn't have a lot of money, and he had to buy his own truck. And so he bought this old, like, 57 Chevy truck, and he worked on it himself. He did all the body work himself, and he repainted it. And he saved all this money, and he put a brand new bench seat in it, and it was Naugahyde. And so Naugahyde is like poor man's leather, you know. It's like, but he was like so thrilled. I have a Naugahyde seat, you know. He showed it to all of his friends, and so he's got this truck. His parents had helped. Like, he's just jazzed about it. And one day he gets out of his truck, and he slams the door, and the vibration somehow cracked the window. And after a couple of more shuts of the door, the entire thing snapped. He finally had to break out all the glass. He's got no more money to put one in. And so he has to drive the truck around with no back window. Now here's the story. He's at his school one day, and he's sitting in his classroom. He said there was a big parking lot where you could look out from the classroom. He said you could see all the cars, and he saw his truck. And he knew that it might rain that day. And sure enough, he's sitting in his classroom. The clouds roll in, and it just starts to rain. And he's thinking of the Naugahyde seat. He's like, oh, man. And it's raining harder and harder, and he's just sitting there powerless. He's looking at his truck, and all of a sudden, he sees his parents' car come screeching into the parking lot. And his dad had taken the day off from work, and him and his mom get out of the car, and they drag this big piece of plastic out of the car, and they drape it over his truck to protect his seats. And Jay Leno said, and I'm quoting, he said, I just sat there in that classroom, and I just cried. And I've always thought, being with your parents has plenty of moments like that. I used to think, gosh, I don't know if anybody had any better than I did growing up. But then I got old and I realized, oh, yeah, right. And I had lots of moments with my mom like that. But if you're like me, you had lots of moments with your parents that weren't anything like that. And that's when it's nice to have this verse. And I know there's not a lot of us in here tonight, but that's okay. I want to read it out loud, and so it's going to sound really weird if you mumble it. I'm going to read it until you read it loud anyway. So let's read it together, okay? Here we go. How great is the love of the Father has lavished on us that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are. When Clarice and I got married, we were given a two-day gift certificate to a really expensive hotel in this area that we went to Lake Tahoe, Nevada. We're going to go there and have our honeymoon. Didn't have much money, but we got to go there. And the big highlight of it was to stay in this hotel. Very, very expensive hotel. Had a round bathroom, you know, and a round bathtub in the bathroom. And so, you know, this was like a... Don't go there. That's not what I said. I wasn't saying that. But anyways, round bathtub. And so it was like this really cool, like it was a suite. And we got to stay in it for two nights. And so it was like the highlight of our whole honeymoon. It was like we're, but the problem was, you know, we didn't have any money. So we're like eating McDonald's across the street, you know, and then coming back to our fancy hotel. And it was like really, really cool. We had just enough money for one fancy meal. Went to a show and we had one fancy meal. It was like really, really expensive. And then our two nights was over and it was so grateful. Her dad gave it to us. It was like, this was like the best part of the whole trip. And when I went to pay for the bill, they gave me the bill. And of course, there was no charge for the rooms, but I had signed for this dinner we had in this restaurant. They gave me the bill. And when I see the bill, it's not on there. And so I said to the woman at the desk, I said, oh, there's a mistake here. We had a dinner a couple nights ago and it should be on the bill here. I need to pay for that. And she goes, what? You didn't realize? You didn't know? Everything was free for you over the last 2 days. It was all complimentary. And I remember like, oh man, I missed out on so much. There was so much more I could have experienced if I just would have known. Now listen to this again, because I want you to know this so you don't miss out. How great is the love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called the children of God, and that is what we are. So I want you to know that. Don't miss out on that experience. Parents aside, what you can know is that your Father wants to lavish you with love.